How do you know when something is genuine? There may be you have a particular expertise in an area and you understand exactly what it is to find the genuine article. My wife likes jewelry, but I don't buy her jewelry because I don't know enough about jewelry to buy good jewelry. And she looks at it, she sees it totally differently than I do. Somebody comes along and offers you an investment opportunity. How do you know if it's genuine or not? I remember many years ago, probably 20, 25 years ago, when Troy Aikman was the bachelor quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, he had there was an interview in Texas Monthly Magazine, and he was talking about how hard it was to determine whether somebody had real feelings for him, whether it was someone as a potential mate or just as a friend, because of his status and because of the situation that he held. And he talked at length about how frustrating that was to not ever be able to know somebody's emotions. And so as we look across our lives, we're constantly challenged by the idea of, is this real or not? In Romans chapter 12, verse 9, that passage begins with this simple sentence, love must be sincere. You remember that Romans is a very theological book until it turns in chapter 12 to be very practical. It begins with the call for us to be living sacrifices. And then following after that, we're told to reduce our pride. And then the second section of that chapter is going to really try to get us to understand about real, genuine love. And if you look at a number of versions, you'll find words like sincere, real, genuine. There are also some, and you may, if looking at your own translation, it take a negative vent without hypocrisy or without dissimulation, which just means that you're covering up your character or you're covering up your feelings. And we're looking at it, trying to put a positive spin on it, but often when you experience love that's not real, it's presented as though it is, and then there's some negative that arises out of that. We want to be a living sacrifice. And God says, here is the place. Here's something to work on through Paul. I want you to look at the way you deal with love in your life. Moving on from that passage. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Not only does Paul say love must be sincere, he says, let me tell you how you do that. And then he lists some things for us that really are awfully useful for us. Hate what is evil. And we, you know, that it's certainly appropriate that that be at the top of the list, because love and evil are antithesis of each other, and God is love and evil can't exist. And it's the same way in our lives. We try to include or tolerate some evil, and all that does is damage the love that we feel in our lives. Cling to what is good. Boy, I want to, when I see good things in people, I want to honor those things. I want to encourage those things. That's what Paul is telling us. And this goes against our nature, because typically we see negative things in people. I've told you before, when we were in Houston, we had a missionary that was served on our staff for a number of years, and then he went to India, and it turned out the whole thing was a hoax. It was a ruse, and he wound up stealing a large amount of money from the church. There was one guy in the church who said, I always knew he was bad. I always knew he was bad. And one of the people reminded him of the fact that, well, you think everybody's bad, so you're going to be right. And that was literally the way he saw people. He saw the bad in you. And I don't have to tell you what his personality was like. I don't have to tell you how people enjoyed being around him. You can figure that out fairly easily. Be devoted. Some of versions would say show family affection. Honor. Respect. Respect people more than you expect to receive back. Don't go looking for honor, but instead share honor. And the unusual part of that is the honor comes back to you fairly easily. And then down in verse 13, it says share and practice hospitality. And if you go back through that list again, hate what is evil, cling to what is good, be devoted, honor, share, practice hospitality. How difficult are those things with somebody you really love? How difficult are they with your child? In our children, we see things that potentially are evil or bad, and we hate those things. Not because we are afraid that somebody's going to judge us as parents, but because we know that if that's in the life of the child, that's going to be so painful for them. We want to cling to what is good. We know what that goodness is going to bring. We're devoted. We don't have any trouble honoring them. We don't have any trouble sharing with them. We don't have any trouble practicing hospitality. One of the big things that's going on in our world right now is a lot of people are going to college and graduating from college and then moving back home for a period of time. Parents are welcoming that because they love their children. When Paul says to us, he wants us to do this toward multiple people, our brethren, if we really love somebody, it's not that difficult a task. It actually happens fairly easy. This week, many of us will have an opportunity to be with people that we haven't been with for a while. Maybe there's a reason that we're not with them. Maybe they're not our favorite people. But we have the opportunity to show some true love. This love, this list is behavioral. These are things we can actually do. These aren't things we think in our mind. These aren't things that we say, yeah, that'd be a good idea. These are the things we actually say, I'm going to do this. And you may look at that list and you may think, well, that list is a little bit long. Then just pick one thing. Pick one thing and pick one person. And this week, dedicate yourself to saying, okay, I'm going to share with so-and-so. I'm going to see the good in this particular person. There are all kinds of opportunities to move in that particular direction. And it also is very measurable for us. Sometimes we really like measurable things. We can get to the end of that and say, I accomplished that. And it makes us feel very positive. Why is real love so important? I've read recently, if you have one person who loves you unconditionally, you are in the minority. There are more people in the world who don't have anybody that loves them unconditionally than there are people who do. Now, a lot of you are maybe sitting there thinking, well, I can't understand that. There are a lot of people in my life who love me unconditionally. I have a mate that loves me unconditionally. I have parents that love me unconditionally. I have children that love me unconditionally. I have brethren that love me unconditionally. If that is the case, then celebrate that. It's a tremendous blessing that you have in your life. But also when we have that, then we want to turn and share that, in fact, with other people. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Love is all you need. Does anybody know what love is? Can you feel the love tonight? You can go on and on and on with song titles. We love to sing about love. It's a fun thing to talk about. It's a fun thing to sing about. It's entertaining. But when God looks at us, he says, I'm talking about the real thing. I'm not talking about some kind of thing, something that's fantasy or something that you play at or something that you pretend or something that really provides entertainment in your life. I'm trying to find people who can love totally and completely. And we look around this world and we so often find love that isn't sincere, isn't genuine, isn't real. At Christmas in 2002, my sister gave her husband, her father-in-law, and her two sons trips to the BCS National Championship game. OU was playing LSU, and she gave each of them a special trip. The hard part about that was my mother told me, your sister is giving all the men in her life a trip to the BCS. My brother and I thought that we would be included in that, and we weren't. They went over flew to New Orleans, spent a day or two there, just enjoyed being there. Day of the game came, they went to this big reception, and then it was time for the ball game, and they walked over to the stadium, and they presented their tickets, and the guy said, "These aren't real." What do you mean they aren't real? These are counterfeit tickets. And so they turned and left the stadium and went back to the hotel and watched the game on TV. Now, think about how complicating that was, all the different areas that complicated in their lives. There were millions of people who were watching the television, were watching the game on TV, that were thrilled to be watching the game. When these four guys weren't, they were planning to be at the game. So it was like it was something they were counting on, and it wasn't there. You go to the grocery store, and maybe you have some large bills in your wallet, and the lady says, "That'll be $143, and you take out a $100 bill and the rest, and she looks carefully at the $100 bill, calls somebody over, and they say, "Oh, sorry, this is a counterfeit bill." Well, you were counting on that particular bill to be part of what you were going to pay for your money, your groceries with. The same is true in our lives. There are times when we count on the love of other people. We count on people to be there. We count on people to stand up to what they've promised, to the oath that they've made, or to the commitments that they've made. And when that turns out to be an illusion, when that turns out to be counterfeit, not only are we missing it, but we really experience the more negative situation because we were counting on it. We needed to use it. One of the greatest sadnesses of my 40 years in ministry has been the manifestation of counterfeit love. You see it in mates, and you see it in children, you see it in parents, you see it in brethren. People who claim to love genuinely, and yet in the true analysis, in the final moment, when it really matters, they don't. They back away. I don't remember the year. Somewhere in the early 90s, some of you may remember the Branch Davidians in Waco. And those horrible images of those buildings burning down with those people inside. And as I saw that for the very first time, I couldn't help but think there were people who went looking for God and they found David Koresh. And they were found an illusion, and the illusion cost them their life. That's just as true of us. People go looking for God and they find his people. And they believe that they can count on some things. And they believe that that sentence, "love must be sincere," is accurate. And then things happen, and it turns out as people go away or leave or do whatever, they don't step up. And they thought they had found God, but they hadn't. If you were to find a place where the people were truly living sacrifices, what would it look like? Let's go a little further into the passage. If you look at verses 14 through 16, it says, "Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud. Be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited." Bless those who would hurt you. I mentioned in a sermon one time that I had watched a television situation where a woman had gone and actually encountered the man who had killed her child. And she said to him, "I forgive you." And it was a really a meaningful and motivating thing in my life. I shared that in a lesson. And after the lesson, there was a little lady who came up to me and she said, "I've done that." And I said, "Done what?" She said, "My son was murdered. And I went to the prison and I put my arms around the man who killed him and I told him that I forgive him." And when I think about blessing those who curse you, blessing those who do difficulty in your life, I see Loretta Franklin, because that's the image that of life that she gave. And that willingness to do that is just an amazing thing. We look around and we see people who rejoice with us when things are going good in our lives. That's wonderful. and the people who put their arms around us and cry with us when we're experiencing these incredible levels of pain. People that, according to this verse, we can live in harmony with. And we don't need to be proud. We don't need to be puffed up, because we all know that we're imperfect in that process. It's not about social status. It's not about being conceited. It's about having interaction and loving interactions with everybody. When you find that place, that's where you say, okay, these are the people of God. And I know that I can experience God's love through these people who are working with me. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've read a story, read it several different times. There was an orphanage, and a man was walking by, and this piece of wadded up paper came over the fence. And he walked over and he picked it up, and on that page, as he unfolded it, said simply, "Does anybody out there love me?" This world is asking that same question. People throughout the world, people in our neighborhoods, people at our jobs, people that we come in contact with in all kinds of situations are asking themselves, "Does anybody out there love me?" And God says, "I do." And they say, "Well, how do I know that?" And God has said to us, "I want you to show them love. I want you to share with them genuine, sincere, honest, real love." Conclude this morning by saying simply, this is a tall order. Living sacrifices aren't perfect. They're going to make mistakes. And as we try to be living sacrifices, we're going to make mistakes. And we're going to want to have genuine love, and we're going to want to respond in real ways. And there are times when we're going to mess up. And when we do that, we need to ask for forgiveness of God and the person, and we need to step up and say, "I meant to do better, and I wanted to do better, and if you'll forgive me, I'll do better next time." To be honest about the mistakes that we make. There are some people out there who pride themselves on being unlovable. And they try to discourage you. They try to drive you away. When Joyce went to Brookdale, there's a little lady over there, and she's really, really, really unhappy. And she wants everybody else to be unhappy as well. And you can't say anything nice or anything good, because it's got to be something that's unhappy. And Terry just kind of said, "You know, I'm not buying that." The lady needed some shoes, and so Terry bought her some shoes. And before long, this lady brought a dress over, and she said, "I got this dress, and the hem's not right on it. Do you know anything about sewing?" Terry said, "I'm not very good at it, but I'll give it a whirl." And she took it back, and the lady said, you know, her eyes starting to brighten. And now, when Terry goes in the front of that building, here she comes. You know, she didn't want to have any contact. She wanted to be miserable in her little world, and she had accomplished that to a large degree. But in truth, given the opportunity, she was willing to come out. We all need people to love us. The strangest part, though, about being a living sacrifice is it sounds like such an ordeal. But the truth is, it isn't. When we lay down our pride, when we get fully engaged in love, and as we're going to talk about next week, when we start to repay evil with good, we wind up being the benefactors. We wind up being the most happy. We wind up being the most fulfilled, simply because we're doing it God's way. This morning, if you're living your own life, if you're living your own way, and you need to alter that to live God's way, we'd invite you to make that known as we stand and sing together.